be advised, the latest round of the JCPOA Joint Commission talks in Vienna ends with apparently no results. Talks will continue. The US says, quote, if Iran sticks to the position that every sanction has to be removed or there will be no deal, then we are heading towards an impasse. And also ahead, Brazil registers over 93,000 new coronavirus cases as the South American country's daily fatalities top 3,700. It's good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, the latest meeting of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Actions Joint Commission in Vienna appears to have ended without a breakthrough. Iran's top nuclear negotiator says the negotiations on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal should still continue after 3 days of intensive discussions. Abbas Araghchi said the process of the removal of sanctions is highly complicated and requires more negotiations. Araghchi stressed that his country must see the effects of the removal of U.S. sanctions in practice before it returns to compliance with the JCPOA.
Well, what we mean by verification is to see the effects of sanctions lifting in practice. So it is not enough for the U.S. to sign, you know, waivers or, I don't know, executive orders, whatever. Yes, they have to officially sign. But what matters for us is to see the effect of sanction lifting on the ground.
Araghchi made the remarks in an exclusive interview with Press TV. He said Iran insists on verifying the U.S. removal of sanctions. He also stressed that all sanctions imposed, reimposed, and relabeled under the former U.S. administration must be removed. The Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister said almost all of the participants in the talks agreed that the U.S. must remove sanctions first to rejoin the deal before Iran resumes its compliance. Meanwhile, the U.S. says, quote, if Iran sticks to the position that every sanction imposed since 2017 has to be removed or there will be no deal, then we are heading towards an impasse. A senior U.S. official said Washington has seen signs of Iranian seriousness of purpose, but not enough during the talks in Vienna, which are held without direct U.S. participation. The official said the U.S. has relayed some serious ideas on how to come back to the deal if Tehran returns to compliance. The official claimed the U.S. is waiting for its efforts to be, quote, reciprocated by Iran. Tehran has time and again said that the United States must remove all sanctions imposed on Iran before it reverses its nuclear deal commitment cuts. Turning elsewhere, the Yemeni army says it has carried out a successful drone strike against targets at Saudi Arabia's Abha International Airport. The Yemeni army spokesman Yahya Sari said the strike conducted by a Qasif 2K drone was in response to Saudi Arabia's escalation of aggression and continued siege of Yemen. However, the Saudi-led coalition claims it intercepted and destroyed a Yemeni explosives-laden drone heading towards Khamis Mushayyat, a city east of Abha. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a deadly war on Yemen in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. Yemeni forces have been carrying out retaliatory attacks. Since then, they have vowed to continue the raids until Saudi Arabia stops its aggression. Now, dates are a staple of the Middle East and some other parts of Asia. For Muslims, they're the food of choice for breaking the fast during Ramadan. But Muslims living in the EU and Britain are being asked not to eat just any date. And as Saeed Poreza reports, it's all to do with where they're coming from.
Dates, one of the fruits of paradise in Islamic tradition. With their paper-thin skin and juicy sweet flesh, they have pride of place, especially on Muslim dinner tables.
Walk into any halal shop or indeed any supermarket here in the UK and you're bound to see dates on display. They come from many different places, including from Palestinian territories. And during Ramadan, they simply fly off the shelf. But could the Muslims living here in Britain, by taking dates to break their fast during the holy month, be unknowingly supporting the brutal Israeli occupation of Palestinians?
We put that question to the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, an NGO running a campaign to boycott Israeli dates in the UK, now Israel's third target market.
They were breaking their fast on a date which is being grown on stolen land, which is actually even unlawful to break your fast with something which is haram.
Israel is one of the world's top five exporters of dates. In 2018, the UK was Israel's largest market for dates worth more than $25 million. Over half of those are grown in illegal settlements, ruled by the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, and several other international organizations as illegal and built on stolen Palestinian land. Not only that, Israeli settlers are set to employ low-paid Palestinian laborers, among them children, to do the back-breaking job of picking the dates. But how are Muslims and non-Muslim Palestinian rights activists to ensure that the dates they're eating are not from the illegal Israeli settlements?
Israelis, instead of coming out and saying product of Israel, they are hiding the identity of the dates. Packages like this, you know, Al-Malik, you know, a Muslim name, Arabic writing, product of Palestine. But when you look, you realize it's a con because there is no company importer or distributor attached to this.
This year's call to boycott Israeli dates subscribes to the mission of the Global Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law.
We were in Britain number one importer of Israeli dates. Last year we informed everyone that we have become second, and this year we have become third. And at the same time, Palestinian dates are being sort of supported and imported more.
This Ramadan, when Muslims in Britain break their fast with dates, they'll be wise to ask themselves if the dates they're eating are helping ease the suffering of Palestinians, or are they going towards oppressing them? Saeed Pourreza, London.
Turning to some coronavirus news now, and its more contagious variants continue to take their toll on European countries. Italy has registered around 19,000 new infections and 718 deaths. The number of fatalities saw a big rise compared to around 500 on the previous day. Italy is the second biggest victim of the pandemic in Europe, with around 3.6 million infections and nearly 114,000 deaths. Britain, the hardest hit European country, reported over 3,000 new infections, raising its total caseload to over 4.3 million. A further 60 people were reported to have died, raising its death toll to over 127,000. The government said around 32 million Britons have so far received at least one vaccine doses in one of the biggest vaccination drives worldwide. Brazil has registered over 93,000 daily cases, meanwhile, of COVID-19 as the South American country is grappling with a new surge of the pandemic. The health ministry said more than 3,700 people have died from the disease in the past 24 hours. Brazil has registered more than 13.3 million cases since the pandemic began, while the official death toll has surpassed 348,000. Brazil is the second worst hit nation by the virus in the world, after the United States, in terms of both fatalities and infections. Elsewhere, the doctor who examined the body of George Floyd after his death last year confirms his death at the hands of the U.S. police was homicide.
So my opinion remains unchanged. It's what I put on the death certificate last June. That's cardiopulmonary arrest, complicated law enforcement, subdual restraint, and neck compression. I would still classify it as a homicide today.
Baker also rejected the defense team's allegations that the African-American died because of a drug overdose plus an earlier heart condition. Baker is one of the most important witnesses as Minnesota prosecutors wrap up their case against Derek Chauvin. The white officer is charged with murdering George Floyd. He was captured on video kneeling on Floyd's neck for 9 minutes before he stopped breathing. This happened in May 2020 and triggered over 3 months of nationwide unrest unseen in the United States for decades. Turkey says the U.S. plans to send 2 military ships through the Black Sea next week. The Pentagon has declined comment on Ankara's claim, but said the U.S. Navy routinely operates in the region. This comes amid Russia's expression of concern over increased activities in the region by NATO powers and countries that do not border the waters. Tensions have been running high between Moscow and Washington since President Joe Biden took office in January. The U.S. and Russia are at odds over a number of issues, including the conflict in Ukraine and the jailing of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. The United States, France, and Germany have called on Russia to halt a troop buildup on the borders with Ukraine and reaffirm their support for Kiev in its confrontation with Moscow. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken held separate phone calls with his German and French counterparts, where they discussed the increasing tensions between Kiev and Moscow. The NATO members described Russia's military buildup as a provocation and condemned what they called Russia's inflammatory and irresponsible rhetoric. Meanwhile, Moscow is accusing Kiev of taking provocative measures near its borders. Russia has pledged to defend its citizens in the Flashpoint region, depending on the scale of the military conflict there. Ukraine has also urged NATO to speed up the country's membership plan, heating up tensions with Russia.
And repeat after me. Since Joe Biden took office in the U.S., relations between Washington and Moscow have only spiraled downwards. The Biden administration has signaled a more confrontational approach towards Russia. It has already hit Moscow with economic sanctions over the jailing of Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny. Washington has also threatened unspecified action over an alleged massive cyber attack, which it blames on Russia. Tensions have risen particularly after Biden publicly stated that he thinks Putin is a killer. Now, the Russian government says it will respond in kind to any new U.S. sanctions amid reports that the White House is about to announce further bans against Russia. This time, the source of tensions is the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Over the past 2 weeks, mainstream Western media outlets have been reporting about an increase in Russia's military presence along its borders with Ukraine. This coincides with reports of renewed clashes between Ukrainian troops and pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine, leaving a ceasefire in the region effectively dead. Ukraine, the US and NATO accuse Russia of sending troops and heavy weaponry to prop up militias in the region. But the Kremlin says there is nothing to fear, describing the repositioning of Russian armed units as a domestic issue. Analysts believe Russia's military buildup along the border with Ukraine is a response to Kiev's saber-rattling.
This buildup of Russian troops is actually, to the contrary, it is in response to saber-rattling by Ukraine that is being instigated by the United States and in the form of NATO.
The notion that Russia is responding to Ukraine's escalation does not seem far from reality. Some observers believe Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is in a weak position at home, is playing the anti-Russian card to appease the nationalist population and mobilize support in the West. They cite a recent crackdown on pro-Russia media and figures, as well as Zelensky's public call on NATO to speed up Ukraine's membership plan. The Kremlin, which has repeatedly voiced concern over NATO's eastward expansion, bitterly opposes the notion that Ukraine could someday join the Western military alliance. After all, Biden has been one of Kiev's staunchest supporters since before the outbreak of the conflict in eastern Ukraine in 2014. This week, Biden himself pledged unwavering support to the Ukrainian government. It remains to be seen how far the new U.S. administration is ready to go in its confrontational path on Russia. If the current trajectory continues, soon we will see a full-scale war of sanctions between the two governments at the least.
After news broke of the death of the husband of the British Queen, social media reacted quite differently to the news than the mainstream media. Insults, jokes, and reminders of Prince Philip's racism were among the many online reactions. Our correspondent Robert Carter has more in this report from London.
A shock end to the week as British royal Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II, was pronounced dead on Friday. Just hours after the news broke, mourners began gathering to lay flowers for the late Duke of Edinburgh, who was the longest-serving consort in British history.
Following the death of such a prominent member of the royal family, British media, particularly the BBC, appear to have gone into whitewash overdrive, portraying the prince as some kind of charitable war hero, whilst totally glossing over his various disgraces, including his numerous racist outbursts and his support for colonialism.
Both headlines and government statements were awash with complimentary tributes. But British social media reacted very differently, with Black and Irish Twitter hashtags going viral, two groups competing to mock the royal's scandal-ridden legacy.
His record is incredibly checkered. He has indulged in numerous racist outbursts and has indeed been a champion of British colonialism.
He said, for instance, back in 2002, a group of Indigenous Australians on a visit to see them with the Queen, he asked them, do you still throw spears at each other?
The British monarchy represents everything bad in their history, and so quite understandably, they have a different viewpoint on his death and what it means.
He said, if you stay here much longer, you will all be slitty-eyed. That's what he told British exchange students who lived in Xi'an in 1986.
The prince had a bad habit of offending minorities, but also represented detested British imperialist values.
If we're going to swear an oath of allegiance to anybody, it should be an oath of allegiance to the people that elect us. We're all living in a democracy. We shouldn't be swearing an oath of allegiance, it seems to me, to a unelected monarchy.
150,000 COVID dead, 10 years of austerity, 120,000 of the most vulnerable and poor people dead. That's who I shed a tear from.
But now the flag at the palace has been lowered, and on Monday, Parliament will honour the Duke with further tributes. But no matter how hard the establishment ignore it, the British royal legacy is tarnished. Robert Carter, London.
Turning elsewhere, the US State Department has issued new guidelines that enable officials to meet more freely with Taiwanese counterparts. The State Department spokesman said the aim of the guidelines is to encourage the US government's engagement with Taiwan. Ned Price said this deepens what he called unofficial relationship with the territory. The announcement comes amid heightened tensions between Washington and Beijing over the Chinese territory. This week, Beijing slammed Washington for sailing a warship through the Taiwan Strait again. China has also condemned the US arms deals with Taiwan. India has reported another record number of new COVID-19 infections, while daily deaths there hit the highest in more than 5 months. The country reported nearly 132,000 new infections and around 800 deaths on Friday. This is the biggest daily increase in fatalities since mid-October. This, as the world's second most populous country is battling a second wave of infections. The government blames the resurgence mainly on crowding and people's reluctance to wear masks. The second surge has already been faster than the first, which peaked in September last year with 97,000 cases a day. India's overall caseload has swelled to over 13 million and total deaths to over 167,000. The country is the third biggest victim of the pandemic after the US and Brazil. Wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
a diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Biden administration is accused of holding an indefensible position after the Pentagon said landmines remain a vital tool in the U.S. military's arsenal. This is the wrong approach, tweeted the United States campaign to ban landmines, USCBL. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Andrea Germanus, writer. This article is published under the heading Deadly and Dangerous. Biden rebuked for embrace of Trump's policy on landmines. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The Biden administration is accused of holding an indefensible position after the Pentagon said landmines remain a vital tool in the U.S. military's arsenal. This is the wrong approach, tweeted the United States campaign to ban landmines, USCBL. The group said President Joe Biden should be moving away from landmines, not embracing their use, the group said, and pointed to the president's campaign vow to undo the Trump administration's widely condemned rollback of landmine restrictions. The criticism followed a tweet from Daily Beast reporter Spencer Ackerman, in which he wrote that Biden's Pentagon is going to keep the Trump Pentagon's policy of embracing landmines, and shared a screenshot of a Defense Department spokesperson's describing the department's landmine policy as unchanged since January 21, 2020. Landmines, including anti-personnel landmines, remain a vital tool in conventional warfare that the United States military cannot responsibly forgo, the statement read. The department also asserts U.S. landmines have self-destruct capability and self-deactivate features that curb the risk of unintended harm to civilians. The Trump administration announced in January of 2020 that it was rescinding former President Barack Obama's 2014 order limiting U.S. landmine use to the Korean Peninsula. Among those expressing outrage at the time was Michael Payne, with Physicians for Human Rights, who rejected the assertion that advanced landmines would spare civilians harm. Despite any purported technological advancements, landmines are still capable of causing indiscriminate harm and egregious injury and suffering, he said at the time. In response to the Pentagon's statement recently, the USCBL expressed grave concern. Jeff Meir, steering committee chair for the USCBL Cluster Munition Coalition, CMC, said landmines should not be considered conventional weaponry. When 164 countries have banned anti-personnel landmines, then this weapon, which hungers for civilians, becomes nothing but unconventional, said Meir, who also serves as the executive director of Humanity and Inclusion, a Nobel Prize-winning human rights group. The new statement also sparked criticism from Oroti Ekowi, Advocacy Director at Amnesty International USA. It is hard to imagine a policy more outdated and destructive than United States policy on anti-personnel landmines. The decision to continue the development and deployment of landmines is deadly and dangerous, said Aki, urging Biden to immediately reverse this decision and join the 1997 Mine Ban Treaty. Also known as the Anti-Personnel Mine Ban Convention, the treaty bans the use, stockpiling, and transfer of the weapons and requires the destruction of such weaponry. President Biden has an opportunity right now to make a move that the world has been waiting for the U.S. to take since 1990s. Join the Mine Ban Treaty, said Steve Goose, Human Rights Watch Arm Division Director, in a statement recently. The Pentagon statement came 2 days after the International Day for Mine Awareness and Assistance in Mine Action and a call from United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres for all nations to join the treaty without delay. In a statement last month urging the U.S. to join the Global Pact, USCBL, CMC said, while the U.S. policy claims that non-persistent mines minimize civilian harm, the Mine Ban Treaty rejects the use of such mines and a faulty premise underpinning them. Decades of efforts to enhance the safety of landmines have failed. No matter the technology, landmines are indiscriminate weapons, the group said. Regardless of their lifespan, they are victim-activated and do not distinguish between a combatant or a civilian while active, rendering them incompatible with international humanitarian law.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us begin the day by contemplating upon what the Prophet's 11th infallible successor, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, when asked about the promised Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance. He will be my son, the namesake of the Prophet. Whoever dies without knowing him will die the death of ignorance. His absence will be so lengthy that the ignorant will wander puzzled and would surely stray from the right path. But the righteous shall remain steadfast and pray for their Imam to appear within their lifetime.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-aliyyil azim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina wa Nabiyyina Abil Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. Wa ala alihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin la siyama baqiyatillahi fil al-arabin. Ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-sharif wa ja'alana min a'wanihi wa ansarihi wa shi'atihi. We've been studying different features of the community of Ahlul Bayt alayhimu salam, and after studying the necessity of being balanced, being truthful, being united, we talked about the necessity of observing the rights of each mu'min. And we said there are lots of rights that mu'minin should observe, and these are indeed to keep the community together and form a very solid, united community, like one body, as Rasulullah said, that the example of mu'minin in their love, in their sympathy, in their affection is like one jasad. مَثَلُ الْمُؤْمَنِينَ فِي تَوَادِّهِمْ وَتَرَاحُمْهِمْ وَتَعَاطُفِهِمْ كَمَثَلِ جَسَدْ. It's like one body. Different cells and organs of the same body. I want now to move on to another characteristic of the community of Ahlul Bayt, and that is to do Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar. Mu'mineen need advice, need support. There is a set of hadith about Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar in Tafsir Ayyashi, you know, one of our early tafsir which contains hadith, is tafsir based on hadith. There is hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. About this verse which was recited, وَلْتَكُنْ مِنْكُمْ أُمَّةٌ يَدْعُونَ إِلَّا الْخَيْرِ وَيَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said that في هذه الآية تكثير أهل المعاصي بالمعصية لأنه من لم يكن يدعو إلى الخيرات ويأمر بالمعروف وينهى عن المنكر بين المسلمين فليس من الأمة. Imam Sadiq said, when Allah says this community, this ummah is the ummah that invites towards good and does Amr al-Ma'ruf and Nahy al-Munkar, so if someone is not doing this, he's not part of ummah. So he's not a Muslim, he's not a mu'min. لأنكم تزعمون أن جميع المسلمين من أمة محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وقد بدت هذه الآية وقد وصفت أمة محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم بالدعاء إلى الخير والأمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر. You think everyone is Muslim, but this ayah is saying that a requirement of being Muslim is to do da'wah towards good, to do amr ma'roof. وَمَنْ لَمْ تُوجَدْ فِيهِ هَذِهِ الصِّفَةِ أَلَّتِي وُصِفَتْ بِهَا فَكَيْفَ يَكُونُ مِنَ الْأُمَّةِ. He cannot be one of the ummah. So I cannot be indifferent when I see in my family, in community, in the society, something bad is happening. I have responsibility. What should be my reaction? That is another issue. We will talk about it, inshallah, but also it needs more time in future. You know, you should follow it up. But we have to be responsible. We have to feel pain. The minimum is you should feel pain and try to do something.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here. Who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
And one more hadith. There are many hadiths, but one more hadith which is very moving is about a person who was a worshipper. You know, in the past there were people who were known as Abid, as Zahid. So this hadith says that كَانَ رَجُلٌ شَيْخٌ نَاسِقٌ يَعْبُدُ اللَّهِ فِي بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلِ. In those early centuries in the Bani Israel, there was a man who was worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, some of people who always, you know, pray, fast, you know, this type of people. فَبَيْنَا هُوَ يُصَلِّي وَهُوَ فِي عِبَادَتِهِ إِذْ بَصُرَ بِغُلَامَيْنِ سَبِيَّيْنِ. When he was praying, in the middle of prayer, he saw there are two young boys and they are playing.
with a chicken. قد اخذا ديكن. They took a chicken. وهما ينتفان ريشه. They were taking out the feather of this animal, this bird. فأقبل على ما هو في من العبادة. He continued his salat, his ibadah, dua, recitation, whatever it was. Didn't bother about this poor animal in the hand of those two boys. ولم ينههما عن ذلك. He didn't do نهي عن المنكر. فأوحى الله إلى الأرض أن سيخي بعبدي فصاخت به الأرض. Allah said to earth, swallow this man. Because he didn't do نهي عن المنكر. So imagine if one animal is so important for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, what about people watching human beings being mistreated and they don't do anything? May Allah have mercy on us. If earth is not swallowing us, you know, we have to be very grateful. So this is the significance of Amr al-Ma'roof and Nahy al-Munkar. As a community, we have to inshallah observe this. Tonight we remember Abul Fadl al-Abbas alayhi salam, a man whose life is the life of fazl and merits and virtues, and a man who was from the beginning, even from the time that Amirul Mu'mineen was looking for a pious wife, pious suitable wife, was thinking of some children who could be brave and could help Imam Hussein alayhi salam. It is said that in the time of Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam, although Abul Fazl Abbas was a teenager, because he was just 14 when Amirul Mu'mineen was killed, but still he had the experience of taking part in some of the battles. So in the battle of Siffin, although he was just a teenager, he took part in the battle. In one incident, it is said that Abul Fazl Abbas covered his face and went to battle. So the people were asking, who is this teenager? Because they could not see his face. He's very brave, fighting, you know, very bravely. So no one was daring to go and fight this young boy. Then Muawiyah said to one of his commander called Ibn Sha'athar, go and fight and kill this boy. Ibn Sha'asa said, a commander like me to go and fight a teenager is not good for me. I will send my children to go and fight. So he sent his eldest son to fight Abul Fadl al-Abbas and he was killed. Then he sent his second son, was killed. The history says that he sent seven sons and all were killed by Abul Fadl al-Abbas. Then he went himself and Abul Fadl al-Abbas killed him. Then he went back to Imam Ali alayhi salam and he opened his face and Amirul Mu'mineen kissed his forehead. So everyone surprised that this was Abbas, such a brave man. When Muawiyah blocked the water in the battle of Siffin, Imam Hussein with a group of young people went to open access to the water, and Abul Fazl was one of them, although he was a teenager. So he was a man of bravery, a man that was never afraid of fighting. And his honor was always to be at the service of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. On the day of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salam gave him a great responsibility. Not only he was Saqqa, but also he was the one who was carrying the flag of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And you know, in those days, as long as flag was in the sky visible, it means that the war was not over. Still, there was a hope of victory.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Oh Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Please include us among the best followers of Muhammad and all Muhammad. Please protect and safeguard our community and our families and our youths from everything that you don't like. O Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallah Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. O Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraji, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraji who are alive. O Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again. Let's speak from.
The light. Hello there, welcome to the lighter side of the news. It's great to have you with us. Now, cheese goes well with food items indeed, especially on the breakfast table in almost every home. But have you ever tested halloumi? The rubbery cheese I'm talking about from Cyprus, which now gets EU-protected status. Halloumi is a traditional homemade item in Cyprus, with historical accounts suggesting its production as early as the 16th century, believe it or not. Now, the salty cheese is the country's second most valuable export. In Turkish, it is known as helim. Europe has now decided to recognize halloumi, called white gold by dairy farmers, as a unique thing to be divided in eastern Mediterranean island there. Locals usually enjoy it tossed in the frying pan or barbecued, eaten raw with melon in the summer, or cubed and thrown into the boiled with soup.
Now, an ancient town in central Italy is fighting for its life as it seeks to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Located in about 100 kilometers north of Rome, Civita di Bongelo has earned unsettling title of Dying Town, the Dying Town. The stunning landmark was built 3,000 years ago on a hill for military reasons, but landslides, earthquakes, and erosion have progressively reduced it to around a third of its original size. Now a UNESCO status may help it survive.
Our motto is resilience because Civita was founded by Etruscans, passed through the Roman era and the entire medieval period to reach the present day. This place is so fragile because the problem it faces is its geomorphological conformation. The cliff is made of clay and volcanic rock, and it is always subject to atmospheric agents, rain and winds, that have totally changed its appearance in recent years.
The fragile town is home to 14 people. Surprisingly, it was a big tourist attraction until it began charging an entry fee to visitors in 2013. Over 1 million people visited the site in 2019 before the coronavirus pandemic. Residents and officials hope the town will survive with the arrival of visitors who bring money for maintenance.
A baby capybara has found a new family at a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali after she was abandoned by her mother soon after birth last December. The little capybara is 3 months old and is under the care of a surrogate mother who is in charge of providing her with the skills she needs for optimal development. The baby capybara was rejected shortly after birth by her first-time parents. But the zoo hopes that in a couple of months, she will be able to unite with another female of the same species.
As the COVID-19 pandemic has affected most sectors in one way or another, the Swiss tech firm has created a robot that can disinfect airplanes in a few minutes. The startup called Uvea says the robot emits powerful ultraviolet lights as it slowly moves down the aisle, killing 99% of bacteria and pathogens, including the coronavirus. The company says a robot can disinfect a single aisle in 13 minutes. The startup co-founder says the UVC technology has been used for decades in hospitals and labs. He says the fact that the rays could be harmful to humans prompted them to seek an autonomous robot that can carry out the task.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot, because there is some solution when you are near the light, and that's dangerous. So we really had to make this system autonomous. So we switch it on, we leave, the machine makes the disinfection, all the plane, all around, and then it stops automatically. So the worker are not in contact with the machine.
The company is hopeful that technology could help restore travelers' confidence in safe air travel and help bring the worst-hit aviation sector back to its feet.
Now, in Egypt, more than 20 ancient royal mummies have been paraded to a new museum to be displayed in Greater Spelder. The mummies include 18 kings and 4 queens who were taken from the Egyptian Museum in central Cairo's Tahrir Square. They were transferred to the National Museum of Egyptian Civilization in Fustat, which lies some 5 kilometers to the southeast of the capital. The ceremony aimed to drum up interest in Egypt's rich collections of antiquities at a time when tourism has entirely stalled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Archaeologists discovered the mummies in 2 batches at the complex of mortuary temples of Deir al-Bahari, located on the west bank of Nile. High-tech light displays at the Beijing International Light Festival provide an immersive experience to visitors and create a miraculous night scene by illuminating the sky. The festival is held in a major urban park in the Chinese capital, Beijing, also a popular site for enjoying cherry blossoms in the spring. As the sun goes down, the park is illuminated with a high-tech light show every evening, and nature's beauty is highlighted with a little help from technology.
The theme of our show this year is Blue Space. We've created a universe in which there's the blue planet. The visitors come in as explorers from Earth, they board the spacecraft, and it takes them to the blue planet. And the installations they see in the park are different biolandscapes on planet blue. There, they need to complete several tasks, which are the interactive installations we've set up. So the exhibition is immersive and interactive.
The exhibition uses 19 different types of lighting equipment to give visitors an unforgettable experience. This is the second year for the Beijing International Light Festival and will last until October 2021.
A young British man who is no stranger to danger takes his life in his hands, free climbing one of the highest skyscrapers in Europe. George King made his way to the top of a 116-meter hotel in the Spanish city of Barcelona without any ropes or safety measures. The 21-year-old scaled the building in only about 20 minutes. However, as he was climbing down the building, he was arrested by police. This is not the first time the British daredevil has risked his life with such a nail-biting climb. Last December, he scaled Barcelona's iconic Agbar Tower with a height of 144 meters. In 2019, he also free-climbed the 310-meter Shard building in London. The feat, however, earned him 6 months in a young offenders center.
A chocolate maker in the Belgian city of Bruges has come up with a novel recipe to boost business in the run-up to Easter.
When you're a classic chocolate maker, make very classic recipes. Caramels, praline, marzipan, and it's okay. We have classic bonbons too. But I think today, the customer wants to go on adventure, also when they are eating something.
The chocolatier's special concoction is a praline made of grass juice, Granny Smith apples, and an East Asian type of lemon. He believes chocolate contains a secret ingredient that can counter the lockdown gloom. Belgium is known as the chocolate capital of the world. The northern city of Bruges is in particular renowned for treating your taste buds to quality cocoa. However, the coronavirus pandemic has diminished foreign tourist numbers, with businesses now relying on local customers. This is heart-melting. A video of a stray cat carrying her sick newborn kitten to a veterinary clinic in Turkey is melting hearts online. Veterinarians were confused as a cat walked into their clinic clutching one of her kittens in her mouth. The cat then meowed for a long time and brought in a second kitten of hers. After a quick examination, the vets noticed that the kittens couldn't open their eyes due to an eye infection. The clinic staff immediately treated the animals, helping them open their eyes after a while. The stray feline and her kittens were placed in adoption after the completion of their treatment. Nothing marks the start of spring in Japan like cherry blossoms. This year, people try to enjoy the sakura season safely by observing health protocols. Scores of Japanese have flocked to Tokyo's Ueno Park and along the Magura River to see stunning cherry trees in full bloom. The light pink flowers symbolize fresh starts in Japanese culture. The cherry blossoms generally last from April to May. Thanks to this year's warmer weather, trees have blossomed earlier than usual. However, the number of people coming out to enjoy the season has fallen sharply due to the coronavirus pandemic. Some sakura festivals around the capital were also canceled.
In the heart of one of the oldest districts in the U.S. state of California, there is a historical little printing house that is receiving a new lease on life. The building and its equipment were slowly dying out, and its machines